I want to read first of all, please, from the book of Genesis and chapter 39. Genesis chapter 39. Now I want to speak this afternoon about six good-looking young men who said no. Six good-looking young men who said no. Now, there are some young men here this afternoon. You'll have to form a judgment as to whether they're good-looking. But there are some older brethren. They used to be good-looking, and they like to think that they're still good-looking. But and then there's some sisters, and this word, I trust, is for all. But you know the theme. It's six good-looking young men who said no. Genesis 39, verse 1, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favoured. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, Lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, Lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1. Now we know the story very well, so I'll just read a few verses from Daniel chapter 1. Verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Meltzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenances of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and proved them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Chapter 3 of the same book. Again, I'm sure we're very acquainted with the story here, we'll just read three verses, beginning at verse 16 of chapter 3. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Finally, the Epistle to the Hebrews and chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Now, we look to the Lord for his blessing upon those readings this afternoon. Now, I suppose, first of all, we ought to establish that these men, these young men, were indeed good-looking young men. You would want me to do that from the scriptures. Well, did we not read in Genesis chapter 39 that Joseph was a goodly person and well-favoured? Interestingly, Mr. Darby, in his translation, he helps us a little more, and he tells us that he was of a beautiful form and of a beautiful countenance. Now, I want to emphasize this afternoon that quite clearly Joseph was tested as to moral matters. He was tested morally. But I love that statement in Genesis chapter 39, but he refused. But he refused. Now, I want to impress that upon your minds this afternoon, but he refused. And then, of course, with regard to Moses, if we go back to the book of Acts, and you remember it's Stephen in his address, he relates to us something of the experiences of the children of Israel. And he tells us about Moses. And he says, in which time Moses was born and was exceeding fair. The margin gives fair to God. Mr. Darby, he says, he was exceeding lovely. Now, please note that according to the passage in Hebrews chapter 11, Moses was tested politically. But I found it interesting that there's very similar language used. I know that we're now in the New Testament, and therefore it's a translation of the Greek instead of being a translation of the Hebrew. But nevertheless, by faith, Moses refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And then can I suggest that Daniel was tested socially. Now, I know he was tested in other ways, but it's that point that I want to bring out this afternoon. Daniel was tested socially. And I find great encouragement reading down Daniel chapter 1 when I come to this statement that Daniel purposed in his heart, he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. So that's three. That's Joseph and Moses and Daniel. And you'll be able to add another three. Well, the older ones will. So three and three make six. There's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But you know, I would prefer to call them Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, because those were the Hebrew names, and they weren't associated. Those names were not associated with the names of heathen gods as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So we're thinking of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And I believe very much in Daniel chapter 3 that these men were tested religiously. Now, I always find, you know, that I get a lump in my throat when I read that verse in Daniel chapter 3. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now, we haven't yet established that Daniel and his companions were good-looking young men, but Daniel and his companions are among those who are described as children in whom was no blemish, but well-favoured. Now, I haven't time to establish the ages of all these, but you'll realise that Moses was 40 years of age in relation to this particular incident. And some might say, well, 40 years of age, you can't say that that was a young man. Well, I would remind you that Moses lived for 120 years. And if now our expected lifespan is 80 years, if you divide that by 3, that's 23 years and 4 months. And I believe that 23 years and 4 months is still a young man. So we're dealing with six good-looking young men who said no. Well, we may not have time to deal with all six, but you know what I mean. Let's think, first of all, of Genesis chapter 39. Now, the story of Joseph's refusal to lie with his master's wife is told in quite striking detail in Genesis chapter 39. Now, it's not without design that the Holy Spirit has placed in juxtaposition next to it the account of the unchastity of Judah in Genesis chapter 38. We might not like to read publicly Genesis chapter 38, but remember that chapter 39 follows chapter 38. And you see the contrast between the upright moral character of this lovely man, Joseph, in contrast to the unchastity of Joseph. Now, having arrived in Egypt, following his brethren's shameful treatment of him, you remember the story well. Joseph finds himself servant to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, and he's servant in his house. And there, of course, he was put into a position of trust. You see, Potiphar had recognized his moral worth. It's interesting that in that passage, we are told that the Lord was with Joseph. But not only that, this had actually been noted by his new master. The Lord was with Joseph, we read. But a little further down, his master saw that the Lord was with him. I like that. Now, it is such a situation that Satan seeks to mar. And how quickly Satan sets about his business. And in this situation, Potiphar's wife is Satan's pawn. And from her comes the awful suggestion that the young Joseph should commit fornication with her. Now, you'll understand that as far as he was concerned, it would be fornication. As far as she was concerned, it would be adultery, because she was in a marriage relationship. So I noted that here in Genesis chapter 39, Joseph's temptation is set forth in 3 stages. Stage number 1 is in verse 7. She said, "Lie with me." Stage number 2 is in verse 10. She spake to Joseph day by day. And then stage 3 is in verse 12. She caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." Now, the first approach in verse 7, it was really quite flattering, albeit it was startling. His master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." Now, note the answer. Note the response. There's no question. But he refused. He said no. And here in Genesis chapter 39, we see that he was unable to do so, first of all, because of loyalty to his master. That comes out in verse 8. And then secondly, in verse 9, he was able to do so because of his faithfulness to God. Now, as far as I'm aware, we read nothing all through Joseph's life of his inner spiritual experience. We're not told about that. But this one expression, "he refused," is sufficiently eloquent to tell us what his inner spiritual life must have been. Please observe his assessment of what was involved in her advances. He said, "How can I do this great wickedness?" So Joseph gave the proposition its right name of wickedness. Now, very sadly, there are those who are trying to call black white and white black. And we need to call sin by its proper name. And Joseph recognized that this sin was wickedness. Then, of course, we learn of his appreciation of such a deed and sin against God. Now, it would have been a sin against Potiphar. It was certainly a sin against Potiphar's wife, but it would have been a sin against Potiphar. But more than that, all sin is sin against God and sin against God. You know, I was reminded of David in that great penitential psalm, Psalm 51. And do you remember he says, "Against thee, thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight." Well, we know, of course, that David himself, very sadly, had committed adultery. And indeed, he'd been guilty of committing murder by proxy and seeing to it that Uriah was killed. But you see, David realized that ultimately he had sinned against God. Now, I want you to notice this. It's far better to realize this before the event, as did Joseph, than after the event, as with David. Now, this wretched woman, she was a wretched woman. She wouldn't give up. In other words, she would not take no for an answer. Now, we considered the first approach in verse 7, but now in verse 10, we have this long period of attrition with Potiphar's wife constantly reopening the question, which as far as Joseph was a closed question. We are told, "As she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her." Joseph was a young man. And what relentless pressure this young Hebrew was subjected to. But you see, if Joseph couldn't be stormed, as in verse 7 when she came and said, "Lie with me," he might be coaxed. Because a refusal, and you'll notice what the text actually says, a refusal to be so much as with her. Well, that could appear to be quite unreasonable. But then thirdly, when we come to verse 12, we have what I would term the final ambush. When all is lost, or perhaps all may be won, in a moment, with the two of them alone in the house. Now, I realize in these circumstances, Joseph was put into a position which could well have been a compromising position. I just want to say this, brethren. You just take care that you don't put yourself in a compromising situation. You just need to be very, very careful in your dealings with those in the assembly who are of the opposite sex. You need to be doubly careful. You see, the world's looking on, and they put a different complexion on things. And so very sadly, there was a compromising situation which was not Joseph's fault. We are told that there was none of the men of the house there within. But on that occasion, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." You know, I was thinking of that strange woman in Proverbs chapter 7. And she might well have used the words of the strange woman of that chapter. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. For the good man is not at home. He's gone on a journey. What a temptation. And yet Joseph fled from her presence, leaving his garment in her hand. Satan's tactics have not changed. And in our day, Satan still works along the same lines. And alas, we have to acknowledge with heavy heart just how successful Satan has been. And almost 2,000 years ago, Paul had to say to the Corinthians, the body is not for fornication. And then he was careful to add, flee fornication. I just want to sound a note of warning. We have a good number of young folk here this afternoon. The standards of the world have plummeted. They've no standards. I feel very much for the younger generation growing up among us. It's very difficult. It's not easy. But I tell you, nothing will mark you out more clearly as a child of God than your purity. Keep thyself pure. Flee fornications. You see, some temptations are more effectively mastered by flight than by fight. He left his garment in her hand. And the temptation to impurity is one of those temptations. You see, we must remember that either fornication or adultery is still this great wickedness. It is still sin against God. And even though our permissive society approves of these sins, the unalterable laws of God require judgment for whoremongers. And the word really is fornicators and adulterers. God will judge. But you see, it is a principle of Scripture that those who honour God, he will honour. And I believe that this is well illustrated as we examine the references to Joseph's garments. In Genesis chapter 37, he is stripped of his coat of many colours. You'll remember that his brethren, they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colours that was on him. But when we come to Genesis chapter 39, he's stripped of his garment as he fled from this lustful woman who would not give up. You know, someone has well said, if he lost his coat, he didn't lose his character. And I like that. But finally, you see, it's Genesis 37 and then 39. But finally, in chapter 41, when in the day of his exaltation, garments are in view, he's not now stripped of them, but he's adorned with them. And you'll remember that Pharaoh arrayed him in vestures of fine linen. God will honour those who honour him. Now let's move to Moses. Joseph was tested as to moral matters. But with Moses, we move to the political scene. And we consider a young man who was brought up in the palace by Pharaoh's daughter. And he was groomed for a place of power and authority in the royal household. I notice that as to the historical record in Exodus chapter 2 in relation to the birth of Moses, it's about what his mother did. And we're told of the discernment that marked Jochebed, albeit she's not named in Exodus chapter 2, but we are told of the discernment that marked her as she looked upon him and saw him to be a goodly child. I've already alluded to the address of Stephen in Acts chapter 7. And Stephen, in his address, he notes that Moses was nourished up in his father's house 3 months. That's interesting. His father's house. whilst the record in Hebrews chapter 11 states that he was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw that he was a proper child. Exodus chapter 2, his mother. Acts chapter 7, his father's house. Hebrews chapter 11, his parents. But you see, Stephen in Acts chapter 7, he continues the story. And he tells us that when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her son. Now we know, of course, that this placed Moses right in line for the highest place in the political realm, administering the affairs of that great world power of that day. And it all lay at Moses' feet. And of course he was the pride and the joy of Pharaoh's daughter who nourished him with a view to him filling such a position. And Stephen comes to this point and he says, and Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. Now I trust that I'm not reading too much between the lines. You will tell me during the interval if you think that this is the case, but you know, much more important than his Egyptian schooling was the godly instruction that he must have received from his mother. You see, God overruled in these circumstances, and it was his mother who effectively brought him up. And we think about the godly instruction that he must have received in those very early impressionable years. And no doubt she would have impressed upon him his essential relationship with the Hebrew people. And so when we come to the passage in Hebrews chapter 11, what is Moses' answer when he was come to years? Now it really means when he was come to maturity. When he was come to years, he refused. I repeat, the same two words that were used of Joseph. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Now at the age of 40 then, Moses manifested, although violently and somewhat prematurely, nevertheless, Moses manifested his true position with regard to those oppressed Hebrews. Now, of course, his brethren didn't understand. And a little later, Moses had to flee from Egypt. But the point was this. The break was made. It might not have been at the right time. It might not have been in the right way. But I tell you, it was the beginning of the renunciation of Egypt and of the palace. It was to bring him eventually, and I hasten to add, in God's time, it was to bring him eventually into direct conflict with all the might of the Egyptian throne. But then he would act, then he would move by faith. And you see, Hebrews remind us, the epistle to the Hebrews reminds us that it was by faith, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. But you know, Moses not only refused, but he chose. Choosing rather to suffer affliction. So there was a choice to be made. You know, I do believe that God still speaks through his word. I just trust that we don't come along to conference meetings just for the sake of coming to conference meetings and putting on an appearance. I do trust that you have come to receive a word from the Lord. I trust you have. God still speaks from his word. And I'm saying, in this company, I'm suggesting that there will be perhaps some young man, perhaps some young woman, and you have reached a crisis point in your life, and you have a choice to make. Well, I like that, choosing rather, and it was a costly decision. On the one hand, there were the pleasures of sin. Our brother has reminded us that sin is a very attractive thing. The world is very attractive. Sin is pleasurable. But it's the pleasures of sin. And on the other hand, there were the afflictions of the people of God. Now, of course, Egypt had its corrupt pleasures, and a son of Pharaoh's daughter could have enjoyed them with all impunity. Now, if you were a man of the world, making his choice with natural reasoning and human ambitions only, the man of the world, he would have no hesitation. He would have no doubt. He will have made up his mind already. You see, but faith, you see, it was by faith. Faith sees things differently. And Moses appreciated that the pleasures wouldn't last. They were but for a season. And if he saw that the pleasures wouldn't last, then he also appreciated that neither would the afflictions of the people of God. They wouldn't last forever. And to faith, well, the alternatives were simple. It was pleasures now for a season, and eternal suffering and woe afterward. Or suffering now for a little while, and pleasures forevermore at God's right hand. And Moses not only refused and chose, but we are told that he esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. You see, Moses was a believer. You see, he looked on to the promised Messiah. He was looking for the Christ. He esteemed the reproach of Christ. And it was faith that recognized that suffering with the people of God was really bearing the reproach of Christ, because Messiah would come of the tribe of Judah. And this influenced his choice. And Moses wouldn't hesitate to suffer with the people of God who were waiting for that Messiah. He would identify himself with them. Suffering with them was really suffering for Christ. And faith accepted it. I think the same idea is in view in Hebrews chapter 13. Let us go forth therefore unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach. We need to identify ourselves with a despised and rejected Christ. You see, adversity with Christ was greater than prosperity in Egypt. Egypt's treasures wouldn't last, but the reproach of Christ was greater riches than were in all the coffers of Egypt. And so Moses looked on to future reward. We're told that he had respect unto the recompense of the reward, and in the light of that, he made his choice. I have shared a conference with a brother. It's not so many years ago. And now he finds himself taken up with politics. Not in the assembly, very sadly, marriage difficulties. Now, I just want to say this. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. What communion hath light with darkness? And sometimes we tend to think that the only possible unequal yoke is the unequal yoke in marriage. Now, we would warn against that. But there's a distinct possibility of the unequal political yoke. Now, please don't get involved in the politics of this world. It can start off in a small way. We trust that you'll pay heed to the warning. Moses refused. Now, what about Daniel? In connection with Daniel, as I indicated, I propose just to deal with social matters. Daniel himself was of the seed royal of Judah. And you'll remember that with others he was carried away from his native land to far off Babylon. That would have taken place just about 606 BC, something around that era. Now this king of Babylon, he was very astute. And he really intended to strengthen his position with the cleverest of the men that were found among the conquered nations. And he was really seeking to work them into his own band of magicians. Now, make no mistake, these were men who trafficked with demon powers, and they gave him guidance by their occult practices. The word of God is always up to date. Very sadly, there are many in our younger generation who are taken up with various aspects of the occult. I just raised my hand to sound another note of warning. Please, please, young believers, don't have anything to do with these things. Don't dabble with things that are of the enemy himself. So Daniel and his friends, they were to go through a sort of college course. The object in view being that Nebuchadnezzar could increase the number of men who could give him supernatural wisdom and guidance. But I want to come to the point. You remember that the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank. We need to understand that as a Jew, obedient to the word of God, it was impossible for Daniel to eat of the food of the Gentiles unless Daniel was prepared to surrender his faith and to renounce the word of God. He could not accept the royal provision. You see, the food was connected with the false gods of Babylon, and it formed part of the provision of that idolatrous king. But you see, we come to that statement that I emphasized. But Daniel purposed in his heart. I found it interesting to note that the Spirit of God here disowns his heathen name. It's not Belteshazzar, but it's Daniel. Daniel purposed in his heart. You see, Daniel really was a man who lived in the light of his name, meaning God is my judge, or my judge is God. So Daniel purposed. Well, I suppose we're looking at it from a human standpoint, but had he not so purposed, there would certainly be no book of Daniel in our Bibles. But he purposed in his heart. Daniel purposed in his heart, not in his head, he purposed in his heart. Not in the seat of intelligence, but in the seat of his affections. He purposed in his heart. And of course it was defilement that he was determined to avoid. Now don't get me wrong, the food was pure from a material standpoint. Wouldn't have made him sick or something like that. You know, it was pure from a material standpoint. But Daniel had in view spiritual defilement. Now, I've quoted this verse, and I've quoted it in a different context. I said, keep thyself pure, because Paul said to Timothy, keep thyself pure. But remember that if you take into account the context of 1 Timothy chapter 5, it's not only moral issues that are at stake. You need to keep yourself pure from spiritual defilement and also from doctrinal defilement. Keep thyself pure. Now, Daniel, he was not only showing great firmness with reference to this issue of separation, but also, I like the wise and the humble spirit in which he made his purpose known. Now, of course, he had been brought, we're told, he'd been brought into a position of favour, but he didn't presume on that. You know, there was no haughtiness on his part. He didn't speak in a haughty manner. And whereas of Joseph and Moses, it is said in turn he refused. I want to point out that in the case of Daniel, it actually says he requested that he might not defile himself. So we not only see his courage, dare to be a Daniel, but we see his courtesy, I beseech thee. I think there's a little lesson that we might learn there. You see, separation from defilement, we know this well, separation from defilement is ever God's pathway for his saints. But much depends upon the attitude that we display in taking that stand. And if we do it in a harsh or perhaps a haughty spirit rather than in a meek and lowly spirit, then our testimony to others can easily be nullified. I've warned about the unequal political yoke. I just want to say, beware of the unequal social yoke. There is an increased tendency, and very sadly, I have to say this in relation to some young believers, there is an increased tendency towards social drinking. Now, Joseph refused. Moses refused. And effectively, Daniel, he said no. I'm sure that our brother Phil can bear testimony to this fact. He already alluded to it. You know, it's afforded opportunities when we've been, you know, in business or when we've been with others and they go to give us such drink, we say no. I don't think we should sort of apologize for saying no, incidentally. You know, we should perhaps just indicate what our feelings are on this matter. But I tell you, people respect you. And sometimes it does give the opportunity of just giving a word of witness, a word of testimony in these situations. So just beware of the unequal social yoke. Daniel judged, his name was My God is Judge, and Daniel judged that the meat and drink of Babylon were not for true men of Judah. Well, our time has gone. I had wanted to speak about Hananiah, Mishael and Azariah, but you know the story. But I just want to say this as I finish. But if not, we will not bow down. You see, they were tested religiously. I'm so thankful that by the grace of God, I've not only been saved, and we thank God for salvation. We've been reminded of that this afternoon. I'm so thankful that I was brought into fellowship in a local assembly. And the assembly can sometimes lose its distinctive character because of religious associations. But if not, we will not bow down. We trust the Lord will bless his word to our hearts for his name's sake.